Sports Day for Kia. The new Kia Niro electric SUV range has landed. And Red Energy, awarded Canstar's most trusted energy retailer nationally for 2021. That's Red Energy.
7 minutes past six. Hello and welcome to the Monday edition of Sports Day. Sam McClure with you, about to be joined by the co-host for the week, Matty Granlin. Lots happening across the weekend, and if you're lucky enough to be a Victorian, we were let out of our cages, for want of a better term, and I think most of us enjoyed it. Although it is an interesting landscape that we find ourselves entering, because the liberties for unvaccinated people versus vaccinated people, not to get political here, but it's hard not to, are very different. Now, how different are they going to be for athletes, professional athletes mainly? Now, last week, the Federal Immigration Minister absolutely shut the door on not just athletes, but anyone wanting to come to Australia if they were unvaccinated. But according to a bombshell leak report in the New York Times today, from emails sent from the WTA in women's tennis, it seems like the door hasn't been shut on unvaccinated players taking part in January's Australian Open. Martin Pakula, the sports minister, was asked about it by Neil Mitchell this morning.
We're still talking to the Commonwealth about whether the rule for international unvaccinated arrivals is either 14 days quarantine or they're not coming into the country at all. We don't expect that to be settled for another couple of weeks. So I understand what's being told. I think the players were being told that there might still be quarantine for even vaccinated people, and so that was cleared up overnight. That's clearly not the case. Yep. For unvaccinated people, whether they'll be allowed into the country at all or whether they'll be subject to 14 days quarantine, it will be one or the other.
The door was shut, and then the crowbar got jammed in there, and we're slightly open, Matt Granlin.
G'day, Sam. Yeah, and the federal government shut the door, and the state government, for every other industry, has shut the door on unvaccinated people taking part in anything. Like if you're a barman, you can't work. Yep. If you're a cleaner, you can't work.
Yep.
But there was a little bit of the door open there for whatever reason for professional tennis players to come in, serve a hard 14-day quarantine, and then go to Melbourne Park. But Cooler's right in that it's the federal government's decision to make whether or not they come into the country. But then it's the state.
Well, they kind of made that decision last week, did they not?
But then it's the state government's decision, and Tennis Australia, I assume, to decide whether or not they can walk into Melbourne Park and compete with vaccinated athletes and vaccinated spectators. It would be, and I heard Tom Elliott talk about this earlier, it would be ridiculous to think that you have to be double vaxxed as a spectator to go to Melbourne Park to watch the Australian Open, and double vaxxed as a cleaner and as a driver and
as an umpire,
a media person.
Yep.
But you can let unvaxxed tennis players serve a 14-day quarantine and play, even though they've been tested and all the rest of it. It just does not make sense to me.
Yeah. A couple of thoughts here. We're just about to be joined by Sam Groth from Nine, who can give us his thoughts. One is that part of me thinks we shouldn't be surprised that tennis players, and I'm using tennis players because of the example of the Australian Open, more what I'm saying, professional athletes, are being treated differently because they were this time last year. I mean, this is when thousands of Australians were trying to get back into the country and were being told no, but we're going to send a couple of plane loads of tennis players who are taking up all the hotel quarantine just so they can be part of a tournament. There was a lot of anger then, and we had a lot of listeners on this show with Jared call in at that time. So that's one part of it. The second part is exactly what you were talking about with Tom's comments. I mean, there's so many questions. Could an unvaccinated tennis player share the same locker room as a vaccinated player that he or she is playing against?
Yeah.
Would a vaccinated ball boy or ball girl be able to give a towel to an unvaccinated player when they were sweating and wanting a towel? It's just, there are so many intricacies to this that I think would anger people.
And I wonder why as well. I mean, is it Novak Djokovic? I mean, Novak Djokovic is, for those that don't know, he won't disclose whether or not he's been vaccinated. He certainly had COVID-19, but he won't say whether he has or he hasn't been vaccinated. And there's a number of top players that have not been vaccinated. But Djokovic coming down, potentially breaking some records at Melbourne Park, is it about him? Is he such a big draw card? And what would happen if we didn't have Djokovic here and we didn't have a few of the big players? Would people not go to Melbourne Park? I don't think so. I think this is an event. I think this is more of a, a good place to be and, you know, a great atmosphere. I don't think if a couple of the big players weren't here, I don't think crowds would drop off dramatically.
13-13-32, if you'd like to have your thoughts on that. One man that's got plenty of thoughts and he's been giving them in a great fashion in the last few years and his work across the tennis with Channel 9 is Sam Groth, the man that holds the record for the fastest ever serve on tour. And he joins us. Welcome, Sam.
Sam, Matty, thanks for having me.
What's been your temperature on all this, Sam? In the last few weeks, it's sort of gone up and down and chopped and changed. I'm not sure we're actually any closer to knowing what the rules are going to be.
No, I think you're right. Well, I think we've got to start with saying we probably don't know what the entry requirements are at all coming into Australia just yet. It's a moving target at the moment, and Tennis Australia is 100% going to be working behind the scenes to make sure they can have an Australian Open and do it in the most open way possible. We know that after last year, it's probably not sustainable to have an AO where it's in a bubble situation. The players have been living pretty freely throughout the rest of the year. And you know, we need to get crowds back at Melbourne Park and all of that. And then I'm sure there's heaps of conversations, not going on just with Tennis Australia and the state government and the federal government, but also with the ATP and the WTA. And, you know, they're trying to keep, I think, everyone happy and but also in the loop as to where these discussions are going. And, you know, obviously we see today the email comes out from the WTA, which, you know, has had a number of its top players, especially on the female side from that Eastern European side of things, that have been against vaccination. And it wouldn't surprise me if that's possibly where this has come from.
Why is the vaccination rate like it is in tennis? I saw 65% of women, 60% of men, and then I heard Craig Tiley Saturday it's getting up towards 80. But you contrast that with F1, and they're up around 98% for teams and drivers. So why the sport of tennis, why is it so low?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think a little bit in F1, even though the drivers are contracted to their individual teams, they're still very much reliant on the FIA and Formula One as a whole. Just tennis, the way it operates, I think, you know, we've got to remember that. And look, I'm all for being vaccinated. I'm double vaxxed. You know, I think we've got to do what we've got to do to get open. But tennis, the players rely on their own self week in, week out. And I think they've been able to travel the world fairly freely without having to be vaccinated. So then when someone puts restrictions on what they're able to do, I just don't think it goes down very well. I mean, they played in New York not that long ago where every member who turned up from the public had to either submit a negative test or be double vaccinated, but the players didn't. So it's a pretty contradictory sport when you look at it from the outside anyway.
Mm. Sam, you're not far out of the game, and I know you've got a young family now, but do you find yourself putting yourself back in the shoes that you were once in? If you're Sam Groth playing in an Australian Open, you're double vaccinated and your opponent might be unvaccinated. Are you comfortable with that?
Well, I think the risk comes with what are the rules around as well. And I think you've got to look at it from a public perspective. If people have had to go and get it to attend any major event in this country, I think if they're going to sit there and they're going to allow people to come into Australia to compete as an entertainment product in the tennis as entertainment, I work in that industry. It's important that the Australian Open goes ahead, and I don't want to see it not go ahead, and we want to see it all back to full capacity and what it should be. It's one of the best events we have in this country. And I want to see all major sport and major events back. But I think it's hard for a member of the public to sit there with what we've done here in Victoria for the last 18 months to then see someone come in and spend their 2 weeks in Australia and not have to go through the same, the same restrictions and the same level of vaccination that we've had to just to be able to do what we do. I mean, we went to the pub for the first time on Saturday and we did what we needed to do. And a lot of people are to be able to get out and have those freedoms. And I think if international players coming in are held to a different standard, I don't think publicly that's going to go down very well.
Let's say 30% of the world's players don't come to the Oz Open. What sort of effect do you think it would have on the tournament? Revenue, ratings, do you think it would have a huge effect or not much at all?
I don't think so. I think the Australian Open's a big part of the Australian summer, and I think people turn up because it's an unbelievable event and we have the best players in the world. And I think a little bit in both the men's and women's games, we're in a little bit of a transition period in terms of the top players anyway. We're looking at a Rafael Nadal who didn't play the end of the season and a Roger Federer who we don't know how much longer he's going to continue playing. He's not going to be down here for the summer. Serena Williams is on her way out. you know, I think it gives us a chance to see some younger guys like we've started to see over the last sort of 12 months, younger guys and younger girls making waves through. And, you know, if it means that transition happens a little bit quicker, you know, when we get two of the young guys battling it out on centre court over five sets, I think the crowd will be right into it. And I think we'll all be glad the Australian Open's happening, and the players that made the effort to get vaccinated and get out here and do the right thing, then I think we'll all probably enjoy it a little bit more and not hold anything against those players.
Just one more from your point of view, Sam. You're no doubt you'll be commentating and you'll be working in the media. How would you feel if you were asked to interview a player that was not vaxxed? You got, as you said, a couple of young kids. You're fully vaxxed. Would you be uncomfortable with that? If Nine said, we want you to go and interview player X, but unfortunately he or her is not vaxxed. What do you think about that?
Oh, look, I think there's going to be people who choose not to be vaccinated in any situation in what we do. And I think the, you know, what are we, 90% odd first dose here in Victoria now. I think that people should have the choice to do what they want. I think that we're all being told what we need to do to have our freedoms and what we is the health advice and what's best. And I know what I've done to be able to live that life that I want to live and protect my wife and protect my kids. But there's going to be people like that eventually moving out society anyway. So if I've done what I need to do to protect myself, I think everyone, you know, should be able to do what they need to. But, you know, I'm all for getting vaccinated and doing the right thing. And I think if players are going to be travelling the world, and they've got to think about exactly what you just said. You've got to think about the staff members, the physios, the people in the media, the people that drive the cars, the people they're going to have direct contact with for the entire time they're out here. And I think if they look deep inside them, they'll realise that they need to do this, not just for themselves, which is hard as a tennis player, because a lot of them and a lot of us can be a little bit selfish at times. But, you know, to hopefully do the right thing. And hopefully we get some of these players that are a little bit against it, they make the right decision, and we get most of them down here for a big January.
Sam, great to have you on. We know you've got a full plate at the moment with all the work you're doing. We're loving your stuff on postcards and looking forward to seeing you dominate the Australian Open come January.
No, I can't wait, guys. Thanks for having me, and I look forward to a big summer.
Great to hear from Sam Groth there. 13, 13, 32, if you'd like to have your say. Always seems to cause a lot of angst with our listeners. As we can understand, it's an issue that's not going to go away. 13, 13, 32, can you believe the door has been left ajar for unvaccinated tennis players? More with Mac Randall after this. Welcome back to Sports Day. What time of the year are we? October 25, Matty Granlin. Mm. Which would usually mean that we're in racing mode, we're in...
cricket about to start.
World Cup on. We're talking about the Australian Open and the build-up to that. No one talks about footy, do they? It's October.
Oh, I love footy.
See, this is the
always
thing.
I always love talking footy.
Footy never actually goes away.
It doesn't.
In fact, some would argue, and I might be one of them, that footy when footy's not being played is the better type of footy discussion because everyone's an optimist. We're all talking about what we can achieve.
Yep.
Steve Hocking is one of those because he's talking about, as a new CEO, what can he and this unbelievably successful Geelong organisation achieve in his reign? Because now you're a Cats man, so yep. I know this is a sore point for you, but coming from a guy that grew up supporting a club that had no success, Geelong in my eyes are an unbelievable success story.
Yep.
Even though the club hasn't won a flag since its first year under Chris Scott. I think you'd rather be closer to the top every year than bottom out.
It sounds ridiculous when you talk to a Carlton fan and Geelong fans get frustrated that you got bundled out in a prelim or didn't win a granny, and Carlton fans haven't had much to cheer about the last 20 or so years.
No, you don't need to remind me of that. But what I was fascinated, Steve's about to join us. Steve gave an interview to the great Pete Ryan in The Age, where part of what he said is the closer you get, the further away you can be.
Mm.
Which I thought was this a fascinating sort of juxtaposition of where success actually emanates from. Steve Hocking is the new boss of the Geelong Footy Club. He's been good enough to join us live on Sports Day. Steve, welcome.
Hi, Sam, and hi, Matt. Great to be here.
So expand on that for us, if you could, Steve, and the Geelong fans listening. The closer you get, the further away you can be.
Sam, my point around that is just related to, I think you can tighten up a little, whether it be a player or coaches or fitness staff. You know, there's a lot of expectation as you get closer to, you know, from externally and internally as well, particularly internally, to succeed. And so, you know, what you need to do is you've got to be really brave and have the courage to take the risks that are required to climb the mountain. You need a little bit of luck as well. It's very, very difficult to achieve. And so I think that there's an opportunity for us just to, free ourselves up a little bit, have a look into the future. I've said that over recent days, across the weekend in articles, that I think we've got to be a touch playful in that space and make sure that we're enjoying what we're doing.
So does doing that, Steve, and immediately looking forward to the future, does that automatically create change and the way you have to view success? So what I mean by that is, the last, we can go back 15 years, but the last 5 years you've gone prelim, grand final, prelim, elimination final, prelim, prelim. Does looking forward to the future mean that Geelong fans might have to accept that it's hard to, in your words, climb to that part of the mountain while looking forward?
No, I don't think so, Sam. I appreciate, where the direction you're taking that question. I think that, from our point of view, our team, our club has just been incredibly successful. You and Matt have just discussed that, Matt being a Geelong supporter, and we thank him for that. It is absolutely, this team is driven towards on-field success. The club is, it's one of our KPIs, top four finish every year. But I do think that you can potentially just become a bit now in your decision making, and it's certainly something that I'm looking to address within this role as CEO is how do we make sure that we are looking after our future as well. And we've got opportunities coming up with the upcoming draft, and we've got a number of selections in that, and we'll set up our coaching team to make sure that we're investing in that talent with the right development coaches around them. So I think you can continue to have both, and that's what I'm looking to try and support.
Steve Hocking has joined us, the new Geelong Chief Executive. Steve, tell us about your conversation with Chris Scott when you first got there, because I have to admit, a part of me, after Geelong were beaten in the prelim, thought he may walk away himself. What was your conversation like? And was there any sort of talk from him, maybe initially after the loss and the scars of that maybe I'll move on, or what was the conversation around his future?
Matt, he was really, really strong, so strong on the fact that he wants to see this journey through, and hugely committed to the Geelong Football Club, and also the future that we want to go on. And I think that for the two of us, we've been apart for 4 years now, and I've acknowledged the fact that Chris will have changed during that time, and I've changed as well within the role that I had working across 18 clubs. So you do need to come back together and really test your thinking as to, where does Chris see it going? Where do I see it going? It needs to marry up. And, I can tell all Geelong supporters out there that Chris is fully committed and wants that ultimate success.
And you come from a unique background, as you said. You've just finished up as the AFL footy boss, so you've got views on the game and the way the game is played. I mean, can you have conversations, or do you get involved with conversations about the style of play and that kind of thing, or do you stay out of that?
Yeah, look, I do need to be mindful, and it's a great discussion to have this, that I'm not coming in as the head of football. I've left that role at the AFL, and I'm coming in as the CEO, so we've got big projects. So, at the moment, we're focused on football because this October period into November is when you set your program up. If you're looking for success year on year, which we are, we're committed to, you need to really deep dive during this period to make sure that any changes you're making, you access and implement that change. You access the talent you'd like to come in, whether it be off-field staff and also players. And we've always been big. I've been huge on making sure that our environment provides, it's the best environment for our players to be the best they can be. And that's both women and men's program. The women's program's gone through a similar transition as well with a new coach and some new staff, new fitness staff as well, and certainly new players. There's 9 new players in our AFLW program. So, Yeah, I've got certainly the football element that I can invest in. Game style wise, that's for the new coaches and Chris to sort out. That's not up to me. I've got bigger picture things to look to. You know, stage five completion, a 40,000 seat stadium, 100,000 members, alternative training venues, bringing our supporters back to GMHBA Stadium with reduced capacity into next year. They're all things that I need to be focused on, the financial future of the club as well.
Ross Lyon joining the club?
No, he's not, Sam. No, we had a really good discussion, Chris and I, with Ross. I've spent some time with Ross in my former role at the AFL,
yep.
You know, just talking about football, and Chris likewise with international rules. And he's one of a number of people that you know, we sought external views. And you know, where's football going? I mean, you know, there's some really good football minds out there. Ross is one of those, and we felt it was our due diligence to, you know, to work through and understand how we're viewed, potentially where the game's going, what are some of the things that we need to consider.
And back to the conversation of looking at the now versus looking at the future, is Jordan Clark a victim of the club maybe putting too much emphasis, and I'm not saying that's my opinion, I'm just saying it could be a possibility,
yeah,
putting too much emphasis on the now?
Look, I think my point around this, Sam, would be, and particularly to supporters, we understand, like I'm huge on young talent. I said that to Pete Rhino over the weekend. You know, it doesn't matter whether it's on field or off field in, you know, commercial roles, financial roles, community roles.
Yep.
You know, you want to unearth young talent. You know, I've enjoyed a large part of my administration career being able to do that, because I was given an opportunity when I was younger, both on field and off field. The point I'd make around the younger players is there's no doubt, you know, there needs to be opportunity and the right programs in place. But I look at Melbourne, and you have a look at someone like a Nathan Jones or a Jake Melton. They were pushed out of the team because young players were given an opportunity and they performed at the level they're capable of. So, you know, for our players, our younger players, it's a case of you've got to do the work, and then when you do get your opportunity, you do need to grab it with both hands as well and push past some of those experienced players. I think Melbourne have proven that, and they're a great example of that. And so, you know, that's the comment I would make around the Jordan Clark piece.
Hey, Steve, just a broader football question, and this would apply to all CEOs and Gillon McLachlan as well, and that is about getting fans back to the game. We've essentially had 2 years watching footy on the couch, and it can be very comfortable watching footy on the couch, and people can get comfortable like that. I mean, is there a concern there and a focus on making sure that we get fans, and kids especially, back through the gates in big numbers?
I think we need to, Matt. Look, the AFL's done an incredible job over the last 2 years. I mean, we're, you know, all of us, the two of you would understand this. Football's been through the two hardest years probably in its entire history of the game. It's been very difficult for everybody, whether you've been a player or a coach or, you know, a supporter, a member of a club. I mean, our members, we hit a record membership this year, and that is just, you know, members committed to the club to make sure it remains strong. And we all need to come together as a collective, the AFL and all the clubs, as to how we work through that. We saw what it was like in 2020 without fans, and our game just wasn't the same. You know, we got opportunities in 2021 across different states to have fans attend. We need them back at the football in Melbourne and down here at GMHBA Stadium, and we need them back in droves. To your point, it is easy to be watching a game of football and then switch off and pick up, you know, something else, one of those other providers. So, yeah, some of the rituals have been broken down over a two-year period, but, you know, I think everyone's looking to bounce out of COVID. That's something we're talking about, is how do you achieve that? How do you make sure that people come back to football?
Matt, Steve was talking before about, you know, developing stage five of Kennedy Park. I'm not sure what the capacity is going to be down there. It must be 40,000 plus.
40,000.
So, yeah. you'll never play a game away from GMHBA, will you, Steve?
look, we'll fit into the AFL ecosystem, Sam. We will... we'll certainly look to have, you know, 9 games down there. That's what we've currently got.
What about a big final, Steve? What about you're playing Essendon in a prelim and it's your home game? You're not going to want to travel to Essendon's home ground, are you?
Sam, I think it's really important to make sure you get as many as your members and supporters in as you possibly can. So lock in the biggest stadium possible. If we can get 100,000 people to a final, we're there.
Well, good stuff. Steve, it's great to have you on. We could talk all things Geelong for the best part of an hour, but time dictates that we can't. Well done on landing the role. I'm sure a lot of Geelong fans are excited about not just the now, but as you eloquently put it, the future as well. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks, Dan. Thanks, Matt.
Thanks, Steve.
Steve Hocking there, the Geelong CEO. More Sports Day coming up. We've still got a chat to Trent Dumont, delisted Kangaroo as well. More Sports Day coming up shortly, but first, news headlines with Tony Tardio.
Good evening. The Andrews government says the vaccination requirements for international tennis players competing at the Australian Open has not been settled. The federal government is still to decide whether unvaccinated players should complete 14 days quarantine or be banned from entering the country completely. Federal Cabinet is finalising the plan to achieve a net zero emissions target by 2050. Scott Morrison will take the plan to the Global Climate Summit in Glasgow early next week. At least 9 National Party MPs, including Matt Canavan, are worried farming and mining communities will be worse off. The United Australia Party is downplaying criticism for bombarding people with political messages. Australia's communications regulator has received thousands of complaints over unwanted texts and robocalls from the party this year. And physical identification and artificial intelligence could be used to verify the age of social media users. New legislation is being put forward to ensure the safety of children online. More news at 7.
Welcome back to Sports Day. Trent Dumont recently delisted by North Melbourne, Matty Granlund, to the surprise of a lot in the footy industry. Played 113 games across 7 seasons. Ultra consistent, in the peak of his powers as well at the age of 26. And the man himself's been good enough to join us. Trent, welcome.
Yeah, thanks, boys. Thanks for having me. You got me there?
We've got you. Trent, talk us through the stress of the last few weeks, mate. And what does the next part of your career hold for you, do you think?
Yeah, I guess there's definitely, you know, it's had its moments of stress. I've been really good, staying busy. I had ankle surgery at the end of the year, so I've got that rehab and I'm back up running. So I've been able to stay busy with a lot of things, but I guess the waiting, and I've learned I'm not a very patient person. Sort of that part of it has been stressful, I guess. I think my best footy is definitely ahead of me, so I'm just hoping that I get an opportunity and then I can just play my best footy for the club that I can get to.
Trent, did you see it coming? Obviously you had a slow start, you had some injuries at the start of 2021 and then got into your groove. But can you see it coming in terms of, you know, communicating with the coach and your manager talking to the clubs? Did you know that potentially you may have to move on?
It sort of all happened reasonably late. At the start of the year, I sort of wanted to explore potentially at the time going home for a few family issues with their health. So that was on the cards, but, you know, they started to feel a bit better and, you know, we were better equipped to deal with whatever was going on with them. So once that happened, I was pretty keen to stay. It was pretty quiet from the club. And then we had a really open and honest conversation. About a month before I got delisted, so I knew what was happening, the clubs that I've been talking to have sort of spoken about going down the delisted free agent path as well. So as uncomfortable as that's been at times, I'm actually excited. I sort of knew what was happening.
I'm fascinated with the process because you say, you're not hearing much from the club and your manager's not hearing much. Are you at a Can you actually just go up to the coach and just go, what's happening? Like, am I in your best 22? Or do you have to kind of wait it out? And is that sort of jumping a few levels to knock on the coach's door and say, what's going on?
I probably could have done that at the time, because I obviously had the calf injury and, you know, I hadn't trained or played with the group until round 7, played round 9 with a new coach. So you're sort of learning on the job a bit. So I was just really focusing on trying to make the team and myself as good as it could be. So I probably just got caught up in that a bit and wasn't thinking about it too much until the end of the year. And then it did get to a stage where we weren't really getting an answer. So we we sort of asked, yeah, what's going on? And then that's when we had the really, really good discussion from there.
Which club has had the shown the most interest in you, Trent?
Well, there's a few, but, you know, it's been pretty up and down in regards to what they're giving, because, like, you know, initially, like, across the trade period, there was list management decisions that needed to be made about players, and then, you know, draft hands and points. I've learned a hell of a lot about list management over this little period of time.
I bet.
Yeah, and so from there, like, it's sort of, this is like sort of calmed down a bit, and, you know, last couple days, I guess, we've started to hear some calls again through the manager, and yeah, that's it's been exciting, but I don't really want to go and say any club names because
that's fair.
You know, it's hot and cold at the same time.
So Trent, can you just take us through the mindset of the last month? Like, I can't imagine you're a bloke in your mid-20s, you've played some really good footy, and then this all happens pretty late, and then all of a sudden you find yourself, you know, essentially unemployed in a in a footy sense. What have the days been like, mate? You know, walking to the local cafe to get a takeaway drink, you know, spending time with your loved ones, trying to get some sleep at night. Has it been tough?
Yeah, it's been actually pretty good. Like, I've got great support around me. So, you know, obviously trying to stay fit for the opportunity.
Yep.
And then, yeah, catching up with mates, like socialising where possible, going for a walk. And then, yeah, just calling back home with the family and all that and checking in on them, and they're checking in on me. So, it's been really good in that regard. And, yeah, there's going to be moments of stress, but, you know, I think everything will work out in the end.
What do you think, just working on your game, Trent, to get to that next level, what do you think you need to work on?
Oh, I believe that my footy at its best is a high quality like AFL player. Last couple of years, like last year, you know, fractured the top of my fib in round one. Then we had the COVID break, but that sort of hung around a little bit with pain, and then had the calf injury and the ankle that was hanging around for a little bit of time. So I've fixed all that up, and I think once I get my movement back to where it was, which is all I'm focusing on now, my best footy is going to be ahead of me.
Could a move back home be on the cards?
Yeah, could be. But also really, like, you know, the family stuff, that's calmed down. And like I said, we're better equipped to deal with all of that. And I'm in a really good place with that. And my family is too. And they just want me to take the best opportunity that I think. And I also want to do that. And, you know, I sort of love my life in Melbourne as well. It's, you know, apart from lockdown and all that stuff.
But, apart from the obvious.
Yeah, apart from the obvious. Yeah, we but yeah, no, I really like it here. I've, you know, been here for 8 years now, and, you know, I've got great, almost like a family, second family over here that I love and love spending time with. And so either or, I'm happy with.
Are you disappointed in North Melbourne? Do you have any ill feelings towards them?
No, like, you look at the club, like, I feel like I'm a reasonably level-headed person, and you look at the club and the performances over the last few years, and even though I think my best footy is definitely in their best 22, this year, you know, I put my hand up, I didn't play the footy that I wanted to, and that's fair enough. So, but change has to happen at a club that's not performing well. So, and, you know, Nobes has absolutely every right to have things the way he wants them, to have the best crack at performing well as a coach for his own, you know, own right. So, yeah, no ill feelings. I felt like it was dealt with pretty well. Still love all the boys there. Still love the people there. And but at the same time, I'm super excited to have the change and hopefully be able to walk in the four walls of another footy club and learn what they're about and, you know, get the best out of myself. So, you know, I can make that club as good as it can be as well, and, you know, be part of a team that hopefully, you know, has great success.
Trent, great to have you on. It sounds like there's some positive things happening in the background, so we look forward to hearing what your new opportunity is, and we'll touch base then.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me on.
Trent Dumont there, delisted North Melbourne player. He's only 26. It sounds like he's going to get another opportunity, and absolutely deserved. His best, as he put it himself, is pretty bloody good. More Sports Day with Matt Granlund after this.
Time now for a sports update for Tyre Power, Australia's biggest independent tyre retailer, keeping you safe on the roads. Tyrepower.com.au.
Young Werther out of the Melbourne Cup. Danny O'Brien on Twitter today, I'm not sure if you saw it, Matty, was actually endorsing, you know, the fact that Racing Victoria's stewards had been so thorough in identifying a problem. This is a big talking point in racing at the moment, is the amount of rigour that the Racing Victoria stewards are going through, particularly ahead of big Group 1 races, to make sure that every horse is fit and sound. There's just Victoria...
Compared to other states.
It's a taboo topic, but Victoria's had too many disasters with horses losing their lives.
And just a bit of news through confirmation that Melbourne, the Melbourne Footy Club, will hold an event at the MCG Sunday, December 5. The event will have supporters there. The first time supporters will have the opportunity to come together and celebrate the victory. So Sunday, December 5 at the MCG.
It's a ticketed event?
I'm pretty sure it will be, and they're going to present the Premiership Cup again,
Melbourne
which will be fantastic.
How good is that?
He's on an Old Trafford hat-trick here, Mo Salah. And he captures the moment. The man is extraordinary. The match is extraordinary. The scoreline is extraordinary. That picture will be framed and kept forever by Liverpool fans all over the world.
Well, the great Peter Drury bringing us the moment. And so much of the game was about Mo Salah, but so much of that game was how easily Liverpool dismantled and embarrassed Manchester United in their own
5-0. Extraordinary scoreline.
No, it was actually quite scary. I think clearly Liverpool, Man City and Chelsea, I think they're the three best teams in the world right now. I mean, some people would say Bayern, some people would say PSG. I know Madrid is still very good, Real that is, but I think those three teams, they're gonna be hard to stop.
Chelsea, Liverpool, Man City and then West Ham drop off after that in fourth.
Yeah, Chelsea won 7-0 against Norwich on the weekend, and Norwich's Twitter account decided the next day to post highlights of the game, which was just Chelsea scoring.
Some breaking news. Durham all-rounder Ben Stokes has been added to the for the Ashes.
Hello.
He's coming.
You are listening to Sports Day. We're here for Red Energy, Cairnsdale's most trusted energy retailer, and for Wilson Homes. They believe in great design, so you love being home. Sam McClure and Matt Granlin with you for the next hour. Damien Ratcliffe from The Age, chief racing reporter, is going to join us. But we're going to start where we did in the last hour, and that is the big story in tennis. Or is it a big story? There's so much conjecture, Matty. I'm not sure what's right and what's not. But we learned today that according to leaked emails to the New York Times from the WTA, unvaccinated tennis players still might be able to attend the Australian Open and play in it. It's an extraordinary story. Sam Groth is at the forefront of all of it with Channel 9, and he joins us to discuss it. Groth, you're welcome.
Sam, Matty, thanks for having me.
What's been your temperature on all this, Sam? In the last few weeks, it's sort of gone up and down and chopped and changed. I'm not sure we're actually any closer to knowing what the rules are going to be.
No, I think you're right. Well, I think we've got to start with saying we probably don't know what the entry requirements are at all coming into Australia just yet. It's a moving target at the moment, and Tennis Australia is 100% going to be working behind the scenes to make sure they can have an Australian Open and do it in the most open way possible. We know that after last year, it's probably not sustainable to have an AO where it's in a bubble situation. The players have been living pretty freely throughout the rest of the year, and you know, we need to get crowds back at Melbourne Park and all of that, and then I'm sure there's heaps of conversations not going on just with Tennis Australia and the state government and the federal government, but also with the ATP and the WTA. And, you know, they're trying to keep, I think, everyone happy and but also in the loop as to where these discussions are going. And, you know, obviously we see today the email comes out from the WTA, which, you know, has had a number of its top players, especially on the female side from that Eastern European side of things, that have been against vaccination. And it wouldn't surprise me if that's possibly where this has come from.
Why is the vaccination rate like it is in tennis? I saw 65% of women, 60% of men, and then I heard Craig Tiley say today it's getting up towards 80. But you contrast that with F1, and they're up around 98% for teams and drivers. So why the sport of tennis, why is it so low?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think a little bit in F1, even though the drivers are contracted to their individual teams, they're still very much reliant on the FIA and Formula One as a whole. Just tennis, the way it operates, I think, you know, we've got to remember that. And look, I'm all for being vaccinated. I'm double vaxxed. You know, I think we've got to do what we've got to do to get open. But tennis, the players rely on their own self week in, week out. And I think they've been able to travel the world fairly freely without having to be vaccinated. So then when someone puts restrictions on what they're able to do, I just don't think it goes down very well. I mean, they played in New York not that long ago, where every member who turned up from the public had to either submit a negative test or be double vaccinated, but the players didn't. So it's a pretty contradictory sport when you look at it from the outside anyway.
Mm. Sam, you're not far out of the game, and I know you've got a young family now, but do you find yourself putting yourself back in the shoes that you were once in? If you're Sam Groff playing in an Australian Open, you're double vaccinated, and your opponent might be unvaccinated. Are you comfortable with that?
Well, I think the risk comes with what are the rules around as well. And I think you've got to look at it from a public perspective. If people have had to go and get it to attend any major event in this country, I think if they're going to sit there and they're going to allow people to come into Australia to compete as an entertainment product in the tennis as entertainment, I work in that industry. It's important that the Australian Open goes ahead, and I don't want to see it not go ahead, and we want to see it all back to full capacity and what it should be. It's one of the best events we have in this country. And I want to see all major sport and major events back. But I think it's hard for a member of the public to sit there with what we've done here in Victoria for the last 18 months to then see someone come in and spend their 2 weeks in Australia and not have to go through the same, you know, the same restrictions and the same level of vaccination that we've had to just to be able to do what we do. I mean, we went to the pub for the first time on Saturday and we did what we needed to do. And a lot of people are, to be able to get out and have those freedoms. And I think if international players coming in are held to a different standard, I don't think publicly that's going to go down very well.
Let's say 30% of the world's players don't come to the Oz Open. What sort of effect do you think it would have on the tournament? Revenue, ratings, do you think it would have a huge effect or not much at all?
I don't think so. I think the Australian Open's a big part of the Australian summer, and I think people turn up because it's an unbelievable event and we have the best players in the world. And I think a little bit in both the men's and women's games, we're in a little bit of a transition period in terms of the top players anyway. We're looking at a Rafael Nadal who didn't play the end of the season and a Roger Federer who we don't know how much longer he's going to continue playing. He's not going to be down here for the summer. Serena Williams is on her way out. You know, I think it gives us a chance to see some younger guys like we've started to see over the last sort of 12 months, younger guys and younger girls making waves through. And, you know, if it means that transition happens a little bit quicker, you know, when we get two of the young guys battling it out on centre court over five sets, I think the crowd will be right into it. And I think we'll all be glad the Australian Open is happening and the players that made the effort to get vaccinated and get out here and do the right thing, then I think we'll all probably enjoy it a little bit more and not hold anything against those players.
Just one more from your point of view, Sam. You're no doubt you'll be commentating and you'll be working in the media. How would you feel if you were asked to interview a player that was not vaxxed? You got, as you said, a couple of young kids. You're fully vaxxed. Would you be uncomfortable with that? If Nine said, we want you to go and interview player X, but unfortunately he or her is not vaxxed. What do you think about that?
Look, I think there's going to be people who choose not to be vaccinated in any situation in what we do. And I think the, you know, what are we, 90% odd first dose here in Victoria now? I think that people should have the choice to do what they want. I think that we're all being told what we need to do to have our freedoms and what we is the health advice and what's best. And I know what I've done to be able to live that life that I want to live and protect my wife and protect my kids. But there's going to be people like that eventually moving out society anyway. So if I've done what I need to do to protect myself, I think everyone, you know, should be able to do what they need to. But, you know, I'm all for getting vaccinated and doing the right thing. And I think if players are going to be travelling the world, and they've got to think about exactly what you just said. They've got to think about the staff members, the physios, the people in the media, the people that drive the cars, the people they're going to have direct contact with for the entire time they're out here. And I think if they look deep inside them, they'll realise that they need to do this, not just for themselves, which is hard as a tennis player because a lot of them and a lot of us can be a little bit selfish at times. But, you know, to hopefully do the right thing. And hopefully we get some of these players that are a little bit against it, they make the right decision, and we get most of them down here for a big January.
Sam, great to have you on. We know you've got a full plate at the moment with all the work you're doing. We're loving your stuff on postcards and looking forward to seeing you dominate the Australian Open come January.
No, I can't wait, guys. Thanks for having me, and I look forward to a big summer.
Big summer ahead. Sam Groth there, the man with the still the record for the fastest serve ever, joining us. Yes, it's going to be really interesting, Matty. As we said off the top, I mean, I found it strange, the change in rhetoric. The federal immigration minister a week ago shut the door on it.
Yep.
For want of a better term. You're not vaxxed, you're not coming.
And Dan Andrews, every profession in Victoria, if you work behind a bar, if you're an AFL player, an NRL player, an A-League player.
Cleaning houses.
You've got to be double vaxxed. That's mandated. And then there just seems to be this equivocation about the Australian Open and professional tennis players like Mark McCool today just open the door. Well, maybe, you know, maybe 14 days quarantine and they can play. It just does not make sense at all.
Not when there are people out there that are choosing not to be vaccinated, which therefore doesn't allow them any of the same liberties that people who are vaccinated.
Yep.
And who a lot of them would have lost jobs, maybe careers, maybe more. If they're sitting there watching these unvaccinated tennis players fly in, do 2 weeks of quarantine, and then walk around like everyone else, it's going to be some anger.
Yeah, we said this last hour, but how much do you think this has got to do with Novak Djokovic? We don't know whether he won't say whether he's vaccinated or unvaccinated. He certainly had COVID, so he's got the antibodies.
Yeah.
Is he that big a draw card, Novak, coming down breaking records, Grand Slam records? Is it about him, do you think, or not?
It's a fair bit about him, but I think it's about Tsitsipas. I think it's about Medvedev. I think it's about Zverev. It's four of the top five.
Yeah.
I mean, they are big draw cards.
Yeah.
And I agree with what you said in the last hour that, you know, it's the ground passes and it's the theatre of the Australian Open and it's paying you $50 and walking around, you know, the outside courts and watching some of the world's best go at it, having a beer on the hill, all that sort of stuff. Yep. I agree with all of that, but the whole package, the international package, the TV ratings, into Europe, the price of center court, the wanting to get to the last 4 days and having the two biggest semifinals of all time on both sides, men's and women's, if that's going to be affected, I don't know.
Yeah, it could have an impact. It might. But, yeah, I just think that people go to watch it because they love the event, as Sam just said. It's a theatre-going event, the Australian Open. I think that no matter who is playing, I mean, if 50% of the players were missing, well, it may have an impact. But if there's 10, 15%, I still think they'd pack out Melbourne Park.
Great stuff. We'll make that discussion around the Aussie Open. Today's APCO Hot Topic. You can win a camper and over 20 grand in prizes to win on now. At APCO, more Sports Day with Matty Granlund after this. Welcome back to Sports Day. We're here for Red Energy, Cansar's most trusted energy retailer, and for Wilson Homes. They believe in great design, so you love being home. Damien Ratcliffe is the chief racing rider, chief racing rider at the Age newspaper where I work, which is my first admission. My second admission before we get into this topic, Matty, is that I had a bet on State of Rest.
Of course you did.
On Saturday.
Yep.
So I was actually at a pub. And I was running around like a crazy man and then heard about the protest. And then I was sitting in the corner like a sick man for about 40 minutes waiting for the protest. I can't believe, now granted, I am not a racing expert as our next guest is. I can't believe they took so long to dismiss it.
Can't believe there wasn't a camera in there. And Jason Richardson, I'm not too sure whether you saw him. He was like a creep, just kind of like peering into the room to see if he could get something.
Did you think State of Rest did anything wrong in that race?
No, actually. I thought the right decision was made.
Yeah, so yeah. I can't believe that it went that long. I mean, it's a $5 million race. Horses don't run in straight lines just because everyone thinks that they do.
Well, let's ask our next guest because he is the man. G'day, Damien.
Hey, gents. How are you? I also had a ticket on State of Rest, so I might be a bit...
so we're both biased. We've both got a dog in the fight.
I might be a bit biased here, but look, I compare it to an LBW decision in cricket where if you're not convinced the ball's hitting the stumps, you can't give it out. And I'm not convinced that Animo was winning the race.
No.
Certainly, State of Rest did lay in come in on, onto Animo, but I don't think it really impeded his run. I think they were still running together in motion, and really, he had 70 metres to try and pick him up and get his head over line and didn't get there. So, yeah, I'm with you. I'm a little bit surprised it went as long as it did. Maybe there was some translation issues with the Irish and Johnny Allen trying to make their case against Craig Williams, who in another career would make a fantastic lawyer. I've been in some of these steward's rooms hearings before, and there's none better trying to argue their case than Craig Williams. So it would have been a sweaty, tense time for Johnny Allen.
Why couldn't we watch it? Why wasn't there a locked off camera in the steward's room?
Yeah, it's a great question. Since COVID, we haven't been allowed. Us journos haven't been able to go in there. It's usually a pretty small space, and they'll let one journo from each publication sort of try and get in there and sit in the corner. But since COVID, we haven't been able to. And I think they've been a bit too slack not setting up camera and media, video cameras in there. And hopefully they've learnt their lesson, because that's one of the biggest protests we've seen in a while. I don't think a Cox Plate's ever been decided by protest. And actually, that might be a little question for me to follow, whether they'll be setting up a camera in the stewards room at Flemington this week, because if we have a similar scenario, I think punters deserve to, in this day and age, be able to listen in.
You've just given Damo an idea for a back page, just Matty, just quietly.
Yeah.
I know. How long until deadline?
I think you missed it.
What about state of rest, Damo? I did hear a bit of commentary post-race that the horse was an ordinary horse from our standard, you know, and it says a lot about the, you know, what's being bred and what's being trained here in Australia. Ordinary horse from European standard, I mean, and then comes here and wins our premier race. What's your take on that?
Oh, I don't believe it. I don't believe it at all. I actually backed the horse back in August because I think that American form really stands up here. The way they race in America, they go so flat out that the best horses usually win. And they obviously had an opinion to take him from Ireland to America and win there, and then set him for a Cox Plate. Joseph's father, Aiden, did similar with Adelaide in 2014, who came from a couple of races in America to come and win the Cox Plate. So it's a good recipe. And this horse had only had 8 starts. He was a Group 1 winner at his last start. Now he's had 9 starts. And 2 Group 1 wins, and he's only been beyond 1,600 metres twice, so he really looks like a great mile and a quarter horse. And, you know, as far as I'm aware, the world's their oyster. The form stacks up. Animo had won the Guineas. He'd really taken a lot before him as a 3-year-old, and very elegant, ran third. So, you know, I think the form will stand up. I hope we see State of Rest come back next year as a 4-year-old and, you know, race around the world like a Highland Reel did, for example.
Damo's just given a wonderful 90-second answer to a question, and the only thing that I could think about is that he backed State of Rest in August. So there I am running around in a pub on Saturday thinking I was a genius for backing something that was 8-1, and Damo's probably got closer to August. What are we now? You're somewhere closer to 50-1, I would suggest.
Yeah, but Sammy, you would have had 500 each way, and I had about 20 each way. So I doubt we're on the same wage at the age. So you would have had a fair collect as well, I'm assuming.
There we go. Shots fired.
Yeah, I'm just deciding not to get involved in that.
Hey, hey, Damo, I'm really interested in this Gold Trip story. So the decision made for Gold Trip, you know, obviously was scratched. Fitz had a good look at the horse and. Now, Gold Trip is going to go to Sydney for the Rose Hill Cup, and the reason being asserted is the fact that they think the veterinary protocols are too harsh for international horses here in Melbourne, and that the Sydney vets may be more likely to allow the horse to run. I mean, this is a really fascinating sort of turn of events, isn't it?
Yeah, let's paint the picture. So we've obviously had horses dying in the Melbourne Cup in recent years. They've imposed more stringent vetting requirements around the internationals competing at this year's Cup. Now, this horse Gold Trip got off the plane at Tullamarine on AFL Grand Final day, went to Werribee. He's been stiff and sore since getting off the plane. But Kieran Maher's stable says that horses continue to improve in his couple of weeks he's been here. The vets let him go from Werribee to the Valley last Saturday and have a track gallop under Damien Oliver, who says the horse feels fine. They CT scan the horse, picked up nothing inside the horse. And then, obviously, the week of the Cox Plate, they decide that the horse is showing signs of lameness. Now, David Eustace, who's the co-trainer, says, yes, there is some mild lameness there, but we think that's actually his natural walk. And, you know, from what we've seen at home, we're confident that the horse is fine, fit and ready to race. And Racing Victoria's basically said, well, no, he looks like he's lame to us, so we're not going to let him race. New South Wales doesn't have these same stringent protocols, so Australian Bloodstock, who own the horse, feel like they should be able to just take him to New South Wales if they're going to let him race there, that they should be allowed to let him race there. And the only thing that's sort of comparable, Nick and Jack Cave, who also arrived at Werribee last year and wanted to race in the autumn, Racing Victorian post a similar opinion on them, and Peter Moody went and took him to Sydney and raced him there. So, yeah, it's a really interesting landscape today. Over the weekend and today, a couple of other horses have actually failed the CT scans. Australian trained, and the Australian trainers have basically copped that on the chin. And Danny O'Brien scratched Young Werther today from the Melbourne Cup for failing the CT scans. But this is really interesting because the horse actually passed the CT scans, yet it's the opinion of these vets that he's showing signs of lameness and would be at risk of injury if he raced in the Melbourne Cup.
It's actually one of the more fascinating, without getting too bogged down, fascinating aspects of racing in Victoria, Damo, the last couple of years since they've really tightened the clamps, Matty. I mean, there are so many stories, and you speak to trainers, owners of horses being checked out the day before a big race and everything's fine and the racing stewards say, well, no, she's lame, and the trainer says, what are you talking about? That's her natural gait.
Is it purely, Damien, because we've had horse deaths in major races in Melbourne and Sydney, you've got a clean slate? Is it just an image thing, do you think?
Yeah, I think so, 100%. Yeah. I think we've come too far now. I think the sport's been too damaged by, you know, the deaths of Anthony Van Dyke last year and the Cliffs of Moher a couple of years ago. And everyone remembers Red Cadeau, who came out here a number of years and unfortunately broke down after the Melbourne Cup. I think there's been about 8 in the last 10 years that have died in our spring carnival, most of them international. So, and we also wrote the story in The Age that the Anthony Van Dyke did have injury concerns leading up to the Melbourne Cup and they let him run. So, I don't think they want to go through that again.
No, you can understand why. It's it's a huge issue. It's not dissimilar to concussion in footy.
Yeah,
it's really the industry just trying to cover themselves, but also say, well, is there more that we can do to make sure that these incidents never happen again? Hey, Damo, as we leave you, Spanish mission or incentivise?
Well, it's hard to tip against incentivise, but I'm not one of those punters that goes out backing $2.30 favourites. So, you know, Spanish Mission brings the right form. I think it's only going to be an international that beats incentivise. I can't see any locals competing. There is one cheeky horse. I'm not sure how good he is, but his name's Sir Lucan. He joins the Gay Waterhouse team from overseas. He's at Werribee at the moment, and he's a Northern Hemisphere bred three-year-old. He's only had about 8 starts, and he might have a profile of one of those young stayers still on the improve. There was $41 around for him today, but he might be about half that quote now. So if you're looking for something to try and get incentivized beat, which I think might be hard to do, but maybe Sir Lucan's one at some odds.
Okay, Sir Lucan might have a look. Problem with Spanish Mission and incentivized, they're both carrying 57 kilos. And
yeah,
the stats would tell you, Matty, that horses don't often win carrying that sort of weight. You have to be an absolute
freak.
You have to be American finishing fourth, or you have to be, go all the way back to Maccabi Diva.
Yep. 58. She's the only one in the last 40 years to carry more than 57 kilos.
Who was the German horse, Damo? A protectionist carried, less than that, 56 and a half. And even that, you know, for a winner is quite heavy.
Yep. No, it's going to be very hard to do. So Lucan, who I've tipped, is carrying just 50 kilos. So, sort of has that rekindling cross-counter profile where, has only had a handful of starts and comes here as a Northern bred Northern Hemisphere bred three-year-old and maybe a horse on the way up, although Gay Waterhouse seems to think he might be a better horse in 12 months' time, which is unusual for her because she's usually as optimistic as they come.
Damo, great to have you on. Looking forward to all your reporting throughout what's going to be a huge couple of weeks ahead at Flemington.
No worries, guys. Anytime.
Damien Ratcliffe, their chief racing reporter. We've got Derby Day on Saturday, then, of course, the Cup, the Oaks, and then finish with Stakes. We're going to have some people in the stands.
For both, aren't we? For Saturday, we've got some people, and for Cup Day, and then
it's just fantastic.
It,
you know? I mean, that's...
we'll open up the following Saturday. And so, yeah, it's great. It was a great weekend to be out and about, wasn't it? Just seeing the bars.
It was addictive.
And the cafes. And
want to go to this cafe and have breakfast, and I want to go to this place and try my favourite then, and this bar. And
it reminded me of my son on Easter morning when he gets all the chocolate, and you say, don't eat all the eggs straight away. Just try and keep some for later, but he did. And he ate too much chocolate. I think a few people ate too much chocolate on the weekend.
I think you might be absolutely right. More Sports Day, including the Adelaide season review, coming up. Welcome back to Sports Day. We're here for Red Energy and for Wilson Homes. They believe in great design, so you love being home. Time for the Adelaide season review, who finished 15th with 7 wins and 15 losses. They bring in Jordan Dawson, who's a great in Matty. They lose Jake Kelly, who I actually think is a really good pickup for the Bombers, but that's another story. And they've got picks 4, 33, 75 and 80 in the draft. So as they continue the rebuild under Matthew Nix, they've got another top 5 draft pick coming in, which is important.
They well, didn't they, in 2021 on the back of a wooden spoon. They were terrible in Matthew Nix's first year. And I think they had a bit more of a defensive edge to them.
Yeah.
I'm not too sure whether you watched that Amazon documentary in 2020.
Yeah.
And
they had no idea how to defend.
That's right. And and that's all he talked about, Matthew Nix. And I think it was Brad Crouch who ended up leaving the club. There was a confrontation with him. And in that documentary, which was really interesting, he said, look, if you don't want to defend, he said, get your boots, put them in your bag and leave. And he ended up leaving. He ended up going to St Kilda. So they got that defensive edge and they got some, you know, they got into the draft. I mean, they've dropped off. Haven't they dropped off since they played in that grand final in 2017, given where Richmond has gone and Adelaide has gone. So they've hit rock bottom. And they're on the way back up with some good kids, I reckon.
Yeah, it reminded me actually what Steve Hocking's comments today, not with us, but in the paper, that, you know, the closer you get to the top, the closer you get to falling off the cliff.
Yeah. It's an interesting one whether you'd rather that. Do you rather bottom out totally, get early picks and then try to get back up the ladder again? Or do you kind of try to hover around that, you know,
I like hovering.
In the mix? Because if you look at Geelong's glory years, and we talked about Steve Hocking, I mean, that, you go back and that they hit rock bottom and got early picks, and they got, you know, Joel Corey and Corey Enright and James Kelly and Jimmy Bartel and Gary Ablett and all these players, because they hit rock bottom when Bomber Thompson first took over, and that was built from the draft. But now with free agency, I suppose it's a bit of a different ball game. But
yeah,
they have certainly got you know, some picks in, and they've got, as you said, they've got early picks again this year.
Now, you haven't seen Squid Games, have you?
I haven't, no.
No, that's okay.
I'll be watching it, though. I'll be watching it.
Interested to see you hear your thoughts on it.
Yeah. I hear it's pretty gruesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is in part.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm looking forward to watching it, actually.
Yeah, so it's not... I understand why people like it, and I'm into all that kind of stuff, but it's not for me, Squid Games.
Yeah.
I didn't like it. But I'm 1 in 100, so.
That Japanese game show type theme is odd, isn't it?
Yeah.
They're into some pretty crazy stuff.
Very popular has been Squid Games. I think they produced it for $19 million and they've made nearly $1 billion off it.
Everyone's talking about it. So this is Squid Games.
Green light, red light.
Okay.
So game they played in the first episode. Very simple take on it. You give a yes to someone or something. And a note of something, and it can be for on field, off field. It could be, doesn't have to be a person. It could be defense, or it could be brand management, or whatever. You can be as liberal as you want with it. But we'll start with the positive.
Green light.
It's a bit of a freaky sort of.
There we go. Yeah, I'm scared.
Who have you got for us?
Riley Filthorpe.
Oh, nice.
Still a pretty tough name to say.
Number two pick.
Riley Filthorpe, but I liked him. I liked what he had to offer.
That game against Hawthorn, he kicked 4 or 5.
He kicked the goal over his head.
That's right.
As well, I remember against St Kilda.
Unlosable game, that one against
Hawthorn. It was. The goal, he's got something, that kid. And
it's big.
Taylor Walker, obviously, is probably his last year, so he's going to be their go-to man. So Riley Filthorpe is my green light.
And leads us to?
Red light!
Well, it's going to be Tex Walker.
Yep.
He had, you know, what he did was shocking, and I'm actually surprised he's going around again. I'm surprised they didn't cut him at the end of it. But he had a really good year on field, to be honest. I mean, I thought he was gone at the end of 2020, but he had a really good year in 2021 and a bit of a renaissance of Tex Walker.
He's leading the Coleman.
And then he ruined it all by off what he did off field.
Are you surprised he's playing next year?
I am. Yeah, I thought that it looked as though...
I thought it was the end.
Yeah, it was the end, and I don't think many people in the football community would have criticised Adelaide if they cut him, but they've given him another year, but he's certainly my red light.
Yeah, I mean, no one who loves football would want Taylor's career to end like this, but that's not the point. The point is that his actions dictate that he needed to be removed from that playing group? I think the answer is fairly obvious from where I'm sitting.
And if he was removed from Adelaide, do you think another club would have picked him up?
No.
Yeah, well, so that tells you. Like, so if there was no one keen to pick him up, they would have been keen to pick him up from probably a playing point of view because he played pretty well in 2021.
Bloody but the oath. Fact that... And they could have not paid him heaps of money.
That's right. Yeah. But the fact that what he did, I mean, that's the reason there was no interest in Taylor Walker. So, and I think the other one with Adelaide, and we talked to Steve Hocking earlier, Tyson Stengel, they lost him obviously at the start of last year. He had off-field issues. I think he's going to be a player. So he would have, you know, fitted him really well into that forward line. And, you know, he's a great pickup for Geelong.
Certainly is. Okay, unders and overs. This is when, in fact, no, we'll get to that shortly. First, the three key questions heading into next year. Firstly, how much, if anything, Matty, do you think Jordan Dawson's inclusion will change Adelaide?
He's a swing man, isn't he? So, yeah, I mean, he's not. It's not like getting Jeremy Cameron, you know, from GWS to Geelong. Or
Chris Judd from West Coast to
Carlton. Yeah, I mean, he's not going to make a, you know, massive difference, but, I mean, he's a good player.
On one wing and Seedsman on the other might. It's going to make them more of an attacking threat when they bounce off half back.
Yep, and then he can play forward. He can play back. I mean, so they can swing him around. So he's a great pickup for Adelaide, no doubt. Second one, how does Taylor Walker get back into that team and sort of get goodwill back again from not only the Adelaide players but the supporters and the football community?
Yeah, well, I mean, the off-field part of it is I think a lot harder. I mean, he did the apology, which I found really awkward. And no one's just going to forgive him overnight for that sort of stuff. As far as football and trust within your teammates, I think it's just head down, bum up sort of stuff. Mm. I mean, Taylor's got enough respect from a playing perspective that he's built over the last 12 years of his career. So I just think he needs to get back in there, and he doesn't have to be the leader that he once was. The sad, cold reality of it is that he's not the leader that he once was, and his actions have shown that. He just needs to get in there and be picked in the best 18 and be playing good footy and leave off anything else.
Mm. I don't think we'll hear much of Taylor Walker
no.
in 2022.
Can they play finals is the big question.
Not quite yet. No, I don't think so. No, yeah. I think...
They're not far off.
Yeah, they're not far off. I think they hover... What did they have? They had 7 wins, 15 losses. Maybe they improved that by one or two, but...
If they won 9 games, it'd be a tick.
Yeah, they're not quite in the top echelon. They're not a top... I reckon another 12 months, and, you know, realistically, they could... You know, 2023, they could think they could play finals.
Okay, to unders and overs, Matty, where we pick three things about Adelaide's season next year based on what happened last year and tell us if they're going to get better or worse. So the amount of wins, so they won 7 this year. So yep. I'll give it a 7.5 the line. Unders or overs?
Over.
I think over as well. I think they'll win at least 8 games. Amount of goals Taylor Walker will kick. He kicked 48 this year, which was quite extraordinary. So we'll make it 47.5.
Under?
Unders.
Yeah.
And amount of Brownlow votes for Rory Sloane and another injury-interrupted year, unfortunately, did Rory. We'll make it 5.5, given he had 2 Brownlow votes last year.
He can accumulate votes when he plays well, so I'll go overs.
I'm saying overs as well. I think he's very capable of 2 best on grounds, isn't he?
Absolutely, yep.
How old would Rory Sloane be now?
28.
No, he's got to be older than that, wouldn't
29,
he?
29, maybe?
I reckon he's in his 30s.
Really? He's around the same 30? Vintage
he's
as...
He's 31.
31, really? He's around the same vintage as Patrick Dangerfield. They came in together, didn't they, at the Adelaide Crows?
That's right. So he's 32 at the start of next year.
Wow.
Remember when the Saints offered him a long-term deal?
They did, yeah. They always thought he would come back.
And Adelaide blinked and gave him 5 years. That's not looking great right now.
And big dough, yeah. No, at 31, I didn't think he was 31.
The dough I could cop, but you give someone that, because he would have been 28 when he signed that deal.
Yep.
He plays that hard brand of footy as he gets beaten around.
He was a St Kilda player, supporter as a kid. I think the Saints were
grew up down the road.
Pretty keen to get him back. But yeah, overs, he'll get over 5.5, I reckon.
Okay, as we go to the break, here's the rural weather outlook.
This week's weather outlook is thanks to Farmers Business Network. Grow your business as an FBN community builder. Clear skies and a bit of summer coming into the border this week. Wednesday's the warmest at 25 degrees at the top. Gippsland seeing some summer weather for the first time in a while, reaching 27 by midweek. Sunraysia's in for a hot one as per usual. Sunny 28 tomorrow with the mercury tip to top 34 on Wednesdays. And in Horsham, you can expect a mostly sunny 23 tomorrow, 31 and possible showers Wednesday. That's your weather outlook thanks to Farmers Business Network. Become a Farmers Business Network community builder and introduce the future of farming to your community.
Welcome back to Sports Day. We're here for Red Energy and for Wilson Homes. Early tonight, Matty Granlund and I caught up with the new Geelong CEO, Steve Hocking.
Hi, Sam, and hi, Matt. Great to be here.
So expand on that for us, if you could, Steve, and the Geelong fans listening. The closer you get, the further away you can be.
Sam, my point around that is just related to, I think you can tighten up a little, whether it be a player or coaches or fitness staff. You know, there's a lot of expectation as you get closer to, you know, from externally and internally as well, particularly internally, to succeed. And so, you know, what you need to do is you've got to be really brave and have the courage to, take the risks that are required to climb the mountain. It's you need a little bit of luck as well. It's very, very difficult to achieve. I think that there's an opportunity for us just to, you know, free ourselves up a little bit, have a look into the future. You know, I've said that over recent days across the weekend in articles that, I think we've got to be, a touch playful in that space and make sure that we're enjoying what we're doing.
So does doing that, Steve, and immediately looking forward to the future, does that automatically create change and the way you have to view success? So what I mean by that is, you know, we can go back 15 years, but the last 5 years you've gone prelim, grand final, prelim, elimination final, prelim, prelim. Does looking forward to the future mean that Geelong fans might have to accept that it's hard to, in your words, climb to that part of the mountain while looking forward?
No, I don't think so, Sam. I appreciate where the direction you're taking that question. I think that, you know, from our point of view, our team, our club has just been incredibly successful. You and Matt have just discussed that, Matt being a Geelong supporter. And we thank him for that. It is absolutely, you know, this team is driven towards on-field success. The club is, you know, it's one of our KPIs, top four finish every year. But I do think that you can potentially just become a bit now in your decision making, and it's certainly something that I'm looking to address within this role as CEO. How do we make sure that we are looking after our future as well? And you know, we've got opportunities coming up with the upcoming draft, and we've got a number of selections in that. And we'll set up our coaching team to make sure that we're investing in that talent with the right development coaches around them. So I think you can continue to have both, and that's what I'm looking to try and support.
Steve Hocking has joined us, the new Geelong Chief Executive. Steve, tell us about your conversation with Chris Scott when you first got there. Because I have to admit, a part of me, after Geelong were beaten in the prelim, thought he may walk away himself. What was your conversation like? And was there any sort of talk from him, maybe initially after the loss and the scars of that, that, you know, maybe I'll, you know, move on? Or what was the conversation around his future?
Matt, he was really, really strong, so strong on the fact that he wants to see this journey through, and hugely committed to the Geelong Football Club, and also, you know, the future that we want to go on. And I think that for the two of us, we've been apart for 4 years now, and you know, I've acknowledged the fact that Chris will have changed during that time, and I've changed as well within the role that I had working across 18 clubs. So you do need to come back together and really test your thinking as to, you know, where does Chris see it going? Where do I see it going? It needs to marry up. And, I can tell all Geelong supporters out there that Chris is fully committed and wants that ultimate success.
And back to the conversation of looking at the now versus looking at the future, is Jordan Clark a victim of the club maybe putting too much emphasis, and I'm not saying that's my opinion, I'm just saying it could be a possibility, putting too much emphasis on the now?
The point I'd make around the younger players is there's no doubt, there needs to be opportunity and the right programs in place. But I look at Melbourne, and you have a look at someone like a Nathan Jones or a Jake Melton. They were pushed out of the team because young players were given an opportunity, and they performed at the level they're capable of. So, you know, for our players, our younger players, it's a case of you've got to do the work, and then when you do get your opportunity, you do need to grab it with both hands as well and push past some of those experienced players. I think Melbourne have proven that, and they're a great example of that. And so, you know, that's the comment I would make around the Jordan Clark piece.
Interesting stuff there from Steve, particularly on where they see, where he sees them short-term and medium-term, the Catteries.
It'll be interesting to see how much input he has in the football department. He is a football person. He comes as, obviously, the boss of footy. He's a former player. So whether how involved he gets with, you know, just even the way they play the game, that will be a watch for me.
Matty, great to have you on tonight.
Yeah, good to be here.
Looking forward to the rest of the week. We'll see you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow.